Hey guys, and welcome to episode 27 of Underrated, a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, and I'm here with my co-host, James Hamrick. What's up, man?
Nothing much. I'm sitting here trying to find any sort of reason as to why someone would dislike this movie, but I guess I'll get more into that later.
Yeah. I can't tell you how relieved I am to hear that. I was kind of worried we'd have this kind of a similar situation as we did last episode with Apocalypse, but I'm really, really glad to hear you liked it.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this one.
All right. I've had a pretty good week as well. I just about nearly finished my latest film-based music video, I was able to put it together real quick, so I'm really excited. It's been way too long since I made one. They're always a lot of fun to put together.
Nice.
Yeah, today we will be reviewing Pixar's The Good Dinosaur. And this is what I would say this is up there with like the Zack Snyder films and the Hobbit films as like some of the most underrated films we've looked at on this show. Because even though the critical reception is mildly positive, basically every single review says, "Oh, it's not great, but it's okay," kind of thing. So I'm really looking forward to talking about this. All right, and before we move on, I would like to ask you guys, if you enjoy this show, to please take a moment to go and rate and review us on iTunes. If you could do that, we would be eternally grateful. And James, have you seen any cool movies lately that you want to mention?
So, some of them cool, some of them not so much. The first one I saw Manchester by the Sea, which, have you seen this one yet?
No, I don't do sad very well.
What?
But I'm sure I kind of want to because I like just like kind of acting showcases, but it looks so sad.
The thing is, I would never deny that this is a very sad movie, but it's no more sad, in my opinion, than a lot of other movies that a lot of people enjoy, and it has enough humor injected into it that makes it like bearable. Like I probably actually found myself laughing more than I found myself sad. Like there's definitely moments where it's like, this is heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But those were like the big exclamation points in the movie, and in between us is just this great Boston dry humor, everybody yelling at everybody. Like it has heart in it, and it has a lot of humor. And yes, it is an acting showcase. Casey Affleck earned his Oscar. He was amazing in this. And even though, she was essentially nominated just for the one scene, but because of how that one scene affected me, I really wish that Michelle Monaghan had won, because...
Monaghan or Williams?
Michelle Williams, sorry.
Is she in that?
Sorry, I watched Gone Baby Gone, and she is in that one. But yeah, Michelle Williams, I wish that she had just that one scene was all it took for me to be like, give her an Oscar right now. She deserves it. And then I watched Hacksaw Ridge for the first time. And yeah, this one also broke me down. The whole like main climax of this movie, I was essentially just kind of streams of tears the whole time, just thinking about like it being a true story and everything I was saying on the screen. I was like, this guy has just done something that almost seems too unrealistic for a movie, but it's based on a true story. It was a really, really great movie, incredibly well shot, and I completely understood what you're saying now about the relationship. It's just like, it's such a sweet, innocent relationship to watch. And every time the two of them are on screen together, it's just so, so enjoyable. Like with Andrew Garfield and his giant boyish grin he has like for the entirety of their scenes. It's a really, really fun moment in a movie that's, other than that, like not always fun, but it's just an incredibly well-rounded movie. And it seems a lot of people didn't think it deserved to be nominated. To me, I think that movies should be looked at in a vacuum. It doesn't, like, your feelings on Mel Gibson aside, there's no way you can say that this didn't earn an Oscar nomination. This movie is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with everything. I think our current culture is so cynical, like, towards relationships, because I heard a lot of people criticizing the kind of the first half and the romance, and just, I'm like, if you have a soul, how can you not enjoy that? It's as you said, it's just so sweet.
The scene where she slaps him and she just crosses the street and she looks, she's like mixed with shock, but she can't help but like him even more. And it was just really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like that film so much more than most war films, is because I actually care deeply about this character because I had the time to. And I think that's an element that isn't given enough credit.
Yeah, that's what surprised me so much, is just how often or how much time we spent with him prior to the war. And I think it really benefited the movie. And then, as a joke, some friends and I went to our nearest video rental store, and we all just took about 5 minutes to go and look around and find the worst looking cover for the dumbest movies. And we came back with The Seven Adventures of Sinbad, the Original Prince of Persia. It takes place in modern day. He is Sinbad only by name, no other reference, and Persia is not mentioned once.
Hold on, is it a movie?
It's a movie. And it's fantastically horrible. The best of the kind of B movies. So much fun to watch and make fun of. Totally incoherent plot. Makes absolutely no sense at all. But I really think that they thought it did. These movies are way more fun to watch than Sharknado, because those movies, it's like they know, like, oh, let's make a bad movie. And maybe this says something about my character, but like watching movies that tried but just were so bad, there's something fun about that. Whereas it's like, this guy killed a shark with a chainsaw. It's like, okay, we get it. You're being on the nose. But this is the perfect kind of B movie.
Is this the Lou Ferrigno one?
No. It's an incredibly long title. And then the second of these was Jurassic City, not to be confused with either Park or World. And its tagline was, "This ain't no walk in the park."
Is this one of those Redbox ripoffs?
Yes. And again, this was amazing. Plot that makes no sense. The villain is an evil CEO of a corporation. And his big reveal at the end is that he created dinosaurs and set them loose on the city so that he can come and save the day and everyone will love him and he'll be president.
So it's a syndrome.
Yes, except far less developed even than that, and just horrible in every way, in all the best ways, though. And then I watched Sing Street for the fourth time. It's essentially become my go-to movie. It's so easy to put on and watch, and I love it every time.
Nice.
I watched Gone Baby Gone again, and that's still my favorite of Ben Affleck's films he's directed. Argo is awesome, and it's a super close second, but I think movies are causing me to fall in love with Boston. The personality the city has, and Casey Affleck is becoming one of my favorite actors. And this whole movie, it's got a really, really good plot, and the way everything works out together is just really well told. I think Argo is his most straightforward and to the point and tight movies. You could probably say it's objectively his best one. But this is still my favorite. I think this one I really enjoyed all the characters. Well, enjoyed. I hated some of the characters, but I was supposed to hate them, so it's a job well done. And it has, to me, one of the most impactful endings of a movie I've seen for me. So if you haven't checked that one out, I think it may have been his directorial debut, but it's awesome.
I really need to check out Affleck's films.
Yeah, they're great. The Town has some issues, plot holes, but it's still incredibly well told. And then the last one, I just watched 2005's The Island by Michael Bay. And I really wish that this movie was 30 minutes shorter, because if it were, it'd actually be pretty good. It's got a really interesting story, and it's got a great cast. Ewan McGregor, Scarlett Johansson,
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean, Jimon Hunsu.
I'm not sure. Correct you.
Yeah, I mean, I probably mispronounced it. But it's got an interesting story. The issue I had with it was essentially the same issue I had with Morgan, which is where it raises all of these philosophical questions the way sci-fi movies usually do. But then it felt like even before halfway through, it got cold feet and boiled down to an action movie. It just made some really weird decisions. Like the twist was revealed to the audience before it was revealed to the protagonist, which made absolutely no sense. Like, we were let in on the big secret before we should have been as an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then something made, like, without spoiling it, even though, I mean, 12 years old, but for those who haven't seen it for whatever reason, something major happens, and it just happens way, way too early. And I feel like because of that, they had to pad out the rest of the movie. And I just, it shows. So to me,
you mean that random chase on the bridge with the truck and the big axles wasn't necessary?
You know, like, some people might look at that and think so, but I would say that this 20-minute chase that leads on top of a skyscraper, then to the bottom, then everywhere it ends up going down to, like, these abandoned houses, it might have been a tad too long.
Yeah. Could have been a good film, but it doesn't have the worst of Michael Bay's tendencies, but it should not have been directed by him. He doesn't have the chops to deal with deep questions and themes. Is that a terrible film? But it just doesn't really live up to much of its potential.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my thoughts on it. It did have like legitimate potential, and it's not really a bad movie. It's what it could have been is really the worst part about it. The fact that it could have been a lot better. Just the action, and it has that really kind of juvenile Michael Bay sex jokes sprinkled throughout that just really feel weird and out of place. Like he just couldn't have helped himself, but this is an all right movie. It's worth checking out.
All right. Anything else?
That was the last for me.
All right, I saw The Accountant again, and I still really enjoy it. It is very, very similar to John Wick, both kind of in tone and style at times. But instead, this one actually has characters and like people and a story, and it works mostly. I think what really makes this film work is Ben Affleck in the lead. I think he is actually pretty great at portraying this character, just dealing with the heavy autism, and then as someone who understands how his autism affects him and is working through all that. Like in every conversation, you can like see so much going on as he's trying to kind of figure out the world around him, and I think that aspect's really well done. The action itself is really solid. The plot is a little too convoluted, and there are a bunch of characters that it tries really hard to develop, but since it just tries so hard on so many of them, some of them don't get enough development. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I think there is a shortage of just well-crafted and like kind of emotionally resonant action films around. You don't see them very often, and I really appreciate when you have one that's just solid, where it's just they put the time and craftsmanship to make a good movie. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just be good.
It's no John Wick. It's really good, though. I do enjoy it a lot. But yeah, the plot was, to me, just so needlessly convoluted. But like you said, what works about the movie is that it has good action, and it does really have... It has really good characters. Ben Affleck is awesome in it. And even though some of the other characters, I feel like, do get a little shortchanged, they're still great while they're in it.
And I also went and saw Logan, just got back from the theater about an hour ago. And we're going to be doing a mini-sode, so I won't talk about it too much. It's good.
I'm so jealous. I can't.
I want to see it again before we review it. But it's intense. So don't go in expecting a normal superhero film. It's pretty heavy. All right. So is there anything else you want to mention before we move on?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Let's move into our main review of Pixar's The Good Dinosaur. The Good Dinosaur was released in 2015. It was directed by Peter Sohn on a budget of between $175 and $200 million. It grossed $332 million. It's currently the lowest grossing Pixar film by over $30 million. It's like the next one is A Bug's Life, then Toy Story. So it's pretty sad on that front. It stars Raymond Ochoa, Jack Bright, Jeffrey Wright, Frances McDormand, Sam Elliott, Anna Paquin, Steve Zahn, AJ Buckley, and Peter Sohn, and of course, John Ratzenberger's hidden in there somewhere. And the score was composed by Michael and Jeff Dana. So the production of this film had a lot of like very publicized kind of problems, as it was originally going to be directed by Bob Peterson, who's best known as the voice of Roz from Monsters, Inc., or Doug the Talking Dog in Up. It was his original concept, and I think the production started like all the way back in 2009. And so he was working on it for about 4 years, and they just couldn't figure out the story. So he was kind of removed from the project, and the co-director, Peter Sohn, kind of was promoted to main director, and they actually delayed a full 2 years before releasing it. And so, I mean, it's pretty... One thing I really respect about Pixar is they don't... Whether you like the finished project or not, they put the work in to try and make a good film. They never release a half-baked product.
Yeah, I just watched Cars 2 for the first time recently, and it seemed like they were just waiting for a mediocre movie just so that they can like throw some sort of criticism at it and say it's bad. Cars 2 isn't even bad. Part of me likes it even better than the first one, but. Yeah, they don't release bad products.
Yeah, this happens actually quite often. I mean, it happened, like, Toy Story 2 was similar, except they only had, maybe a year to rewrite it from the ground up, and having Ratatouille and Brave as well, where they had to replace directors. It happens more often than you think in these animated projects. So this was your first viewing, James. What did you think of this movie?
I genuinely love this movie. I'm like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to fathom how people were meh about it, because it's so good. It really, really is up there to me with some of Pixar's best. So, and it's weird, this is the first time where it's a movie that I hadn't seen, and I watched just for the podcast, that had I seen this beforehand, I would have been I would have been like you and say this is up there with The Hobbit and like Batman versus Superman, in that I want to do an episode really badly over this, because it really connected with me, and I love almost everything about it.
It's really good to hear. Yeah, the first time I saw it, I was kind of still high off Inside Out, and you're expecting kind of the normal Pixar formula, which is like essentially now whenever I tell someone to watch it, I have to kind of just don't expect what you come to expect from Pixar. This is something different. And so the first viewing, I pretty much agree with the general consensus. Yeah, it's cute, but not great. And then I saw it again, and I was like, man, there's some serious beauty in this film. And then the third time around, I'm like, this movie is basically a freaking masterpiece kind of thing. So just to start right into it, I think most of the criticism that I've heard, I think some are legitimate, but I think a lot of them are based just on a misunderstanding of what this film is trying to be, and like expectations of what you have. I mean, you're coming out of Inside Out, which is like one of Pixar's most intricately plotted and just like wonderfully built up character drama, and it's awesome. But this isn't that. This is something that's like far more simple and just kind of more symbolic and just quiet. And I think you have to go into this film without the expectations of what you think a Pixar film should be to properly enjoy it. And I'm really sad that this film bombed, because it's an original film, and I would say it's like one of their most unique films in like structure and style. And so this film being a box office disappointment, it really worries me kind of about the kind of risks they'll take in the future.
Yeah, I hope that they think that it might just be an isolated incident, because I love the typical Pixar movies. There's not one that I dislike. I think it'd be cool to get movies like this that are so different from their other ones. To me, this movie was essentially The Revenant if it were a better movie and made for kids. I mean, yeah. The Revenant to me had a lot of issues, and this almost got the exact same plot across: someone else lost in the wilderness, going through a great journey to get back, and in a Western setting. And I enjoyed this one way more.
Yeah, this one had likable characters, and it wasn't like 40 minutes too long.
Yeah, we weren't forced to look at the sky for half of its runtime.
Yeah, the sky is still there. The honest trailer for that is the best.
The first thing that I noticed right off the bat is this is Pixar's best looking movie, in my opinion. Not only Pixar's best movie, this is possibly the most stunningly gorgeous animated movies I've ever seen. Every frame of this, every environment, every character model is so intricately crafted that you can just pause and look at the screen. And it's insane how much detail is put in this world. The water is incredible. These huge, wide environments are lifelike. And even though the actual dimensions of all of the different creatures are, you know, cartoonish, they somehow still look incredibly real. Like I could reach out and touch it as like a physical object. Yeah. So just the action is incredible to look at. It really is, to me, one of the most amazing to look at animated films I've ever seen.
Yeah, and just beyond the animation, which is like, even the people who hate this film like rave about the animation, because it is, as you said, it's stunning. But even beyond that, I was just like watching just the shot composition and how everything is, the shots are just framed. It really kind of shows in sharp relief how little work most animated films put into actual like composition. I think like How to Train Your Dragon 2 is another gorgeous animated film, but every shot, it looks like it was, they're all framed like live action films. You can tell the thought was put into the camera work. Like, this is a crane shot, this is a helicopter shot kind of thing. And they're all beautifully composed. Like the shots where they're running through the grass with the fireflies, or when he's towards the end, when he's running through the birds and they're just kind of all like rising up around him. I mean, they're just like, I'm like speechless and almost crying just because of how beautiful the things on screen are. And while other films may have great animation, I don't see that much care put into just making something cinematic in animated films. As like Peter Stone has a great eye, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, it was filmed like an epic Western. These giant, huge shots that just encompass so much of the landscape. And then these close-ups, like going through the river, going through the forest, chase scenes. Everything is shot exactly like you said, like he's shooting a live-action movie. And some of the moments, I thought the same thing. I'm like, there's not even words being said, but I'm like getting goosebumps and I want to cry just because of what's on the screen. It looks so good. And yeah, that scene where he's running around with his father initially, and then with Spot later, and getting all of the fireflies to rise up. It's just such an incredibly shot scene, and it's not the only one. This whole movie is just really, really well put together.
Yeah. I guess I want to deal with like one of the bigger criticisms, what I think is the one real flaw of this film. And just to get it out of the way, I think it's that the beginning is a little rocky. The dialogue, as they're setting up this world and the parents and all the kids, the dialogue is very obvious and sometimes pretty clunky. They kind of just come out there and state, then restate like the film's themes. And it's definitely not as well polished as you'd expect from Pixar, which is odd because it was written by Meg LaFave, who co-wrote Inside Out. I'm guessing she probably didn't have as much time to polish off a script. And so when it's the dialogue, the dialogue is where the film is the weakest. And I think if it's the first 15 minutes, it can be a little rocky. And so I do acknowledge that the flaw, but I wouldn't say it's bad, though.
Yeah, I think I was just so in awe of the animation at first. Maybe I overlooked it. And I really liked the voice cast, too. So I didn't really notice anything wrong with the dialogue. It did feel like they were telling you essentially everything that, as a viewer, you need to know right now. And I guess I could see how it'd be, you know, could be called too obvious, but for me, it worked. We were essentially this character who is now being told about, you know, everything around him. And I thought there were actually some fairly funny moments in the first 15 minutes.
It does
minutes.
Stand kind of in sharp relief to just the beautifully subtle visual storytelling that you get for the rest of the film. To have the dialogue kind of so obvious. I don't think it's a huge flaw, and I do agree with the voice cast. Like, Jeffrey Wright and Frances McDormand are they lovely in this movie.
So good, but now I'm just going to cry.
And I guess I might as well deal with another criticism that I've heard from actually several of our podcasting friends. I'm not going to name them, but there are a few people I know that like viciously hate this film because I think the parents are like horrible and abusive. Essentially, like, I've had a couple of arguments. What I got is that they think that the making your mark part is like something that is required for Arlo and the kids to be accepted as part of the family. Like, they're as if they're kind of social outcasts until they make their mark. And I don't know what movie they watched because I've seen this film four times and nothing of that nature is in this film.
Yeah, that's really I didn't get that vibe at all. He was genuinely loved by his parent. Like, to me, what disproves it is that, you know, it's not until the end of the movie before he, you know, makes his mark. And yet it was not at all until the end of the movie. Like, it didn't take to the end of the movie before I believed that his parents cared for him and that he cared for his parents. You know, whenever his dad looks back at his injured leg and stops, that's caring. Whenever his mother is out there, you know, looking at him as he's out in the field doing his job, like, not for one second would I ever assume that they're treating him as like some sort of outcast until he makes his mark. It's a dinosaur culture, first of all. The idea that you're expected to just do something that's not abusive. Yeah, I didn't read any sort of reviews, so most of the criticisms you're going to bring up for us to address are kind of new to me, but that one just sounds really, really out of left field.
Yeah, and essentially, it's a trophy. As that says, it's a privilege that one gets when they do something great for a cause that is bigger than themselves, essentially. I mean, I don't see how it's any different than, like, displaying your child's sports trophies or, like, pinning their report card to the fridge. That's essentially what it is. It's with acknowledging when they do something incredible and bigger than themselves. And if they were like trying to keep Arlo down because he hadn't done that, they wouldn't take the time to constantly reassure him of their love like they do. Like, where, and you see how they're legitimately worried about him, because, well, I guess one of the most incredible aspects of this film is that the world we are given is like defined by danger, and everything is out to kill you. Literally, like, if you wander off, you're going to get eaten, or you're going to fall in the river and drown. If you have a bad harvest, you're going to starve that winter. And so it's a frontier story. The harsh reality and danger of nature is like ever present. And so Arlo is a character that's defined by his crippling fear in a world that is out to kill him. And you have these parents who love him and are trying to just like, the parents' most important task is to make sure the kid can function by the time they grow up. I mean, if the kid can't survive, or at least can't live by the time they're grown up. They kind of fail at their most important task. So, and the parents aren't perfect. I mean, who here had perfect parents? And so you see them trying different ways to help and coax Arlo out of his fear, like where the dad goes and shows him the fireflies. I think it's like kind of showing that nature, while it can be scary, it's also nature's also beautiful. And just having that moment with him and telling him, like, you're me and more. You can be even better than you, like, you can be even bigger than better than I am. And then the scene where they're kind of giving him, trying to give him different chores to help him kind of become more sure of himself. And then, like, as all parents do, they get frustrated sometimes. Like, in the heat of the moment, like when Arlo lets the critter or Spot go, and he's like kind of he pushes him a little too far, and he falls and injures himself. And you see it in Henry's eyes. Just the instant that happens, like, just the instant regret, and he, like, immediately he comes, he's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that, and goes and apologizes to him. I mean, it's what parents should do. I mean, no, parents, they aren't perfect. They have flaws, and sometimes they do push their kids farther than they should. And the mark of a good character is not that they're perfect, is that when they are wrong, they own up to it and apologize and move on. And so that's why, actually, I think Henry is, like, one of my favorite cinematic parents, in a way.
Yeah, I can just think of so many moments, having only seen it once, that would just disprove these arguments that he's, I don't know, treating Arlo in any sort of wrong way. I mean, other than, yeah, he pushes him too far, but like you said, that's probably typical of a lot of parents. But just thinking about it, one scene that I loved a lot, just because of what else they could have done, was whenever the egg initially hatches and they think he's going to be huge, and he's this little bitty guy who's obviously terrified of everything. And instead of, I initially expected the dad to be upset, like he was waiting for his strong son to come out, and that there's going to be a part of the story was going to be about him having to try to earn his father's appreciation. But his father just kind of giggles and helps him out, and he instantly, like, his father is in love with the child as soon as he sees him. Like, it almost seemed like as soon as he saw how small he was, like, he couldn't keep it to himself. Like, he clearly loved, like, this new child. And then the line that you mentioned, you know, you're what I am and more. He had a fatherly love for this kid. And yeah, I just, mm-hmm. I'm still kind of taken aback by that.
And they stick up for him. Like, when he's being bullied by his brother, they immediately stand up to him and stop, put a stop to it. And you have to think about just how hard this world is when they do push him and they do try to force him into doing chores and trying to become a functional person. They're simply doing their job as parents to prepare their child. It's not, I don't know, that criticism just frustrates me so much.
Yeah, that's, I mean, well, now I have one more thing to be frustrated about. I didn't even know that was a criticism, but back to the more positives, though. Something else that I loved about this movie was its music.
Oh, man.
This score is phenomenal, and it's, most of the time, it's never just in your face, like, trying to get attention, but it sets the mood and the atmosphere perfectly. It's everything that a score should be. It's a companion to what's on the screen, and it's so good in every scene.
Yeah, it's most of it's kind of a charming, kind of folksy Western feel, but it also goes to some interesting places, like the man theme, which is like this very primal, almost ethereal, I don't know, it's like a maybe wooden flute or something, but it's really gorgeous and just haunting. And just overall, I would put this up there with my top five Pixar scores, all the above being Michael Giacchino ones, but yeah, it's so lovely. I listen to it quite often. I think it's definitely underrated as far as Pixar scores as well.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not that there's really just these themes that I'm going to be humming in my head, although there might be whenever I go back, because I will listen to
there
it
are
again.
For me.
See, and I'm sure that I'll end up getting there, but just as a first-time viewer, watching this with the music in the background, it just helped. It helped tell the story. It was, like I said, it wasn't in your face. It wasn't just, it was never too loud. And whenever it was used, it was just, it was used to help sell the emotion of the scene. It was exciting when it needed to be. It was adventurous when it needed to be. It was, like, haunting when it needed to be. And it always felt consistent. It always felt like it belonged to the same world that the movie was in. It's to me, it's one of the best cases of where the score matched its actual film so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I want to get into the thing I love most about this film, and that is, as you said, this is The Revenant for kids, and as such, it's this weird kind of film that the themes and functions are kind of brought to you, like, symbolically as the film goes. Essentially, it's Arlo's journey from a character that's afraid of everything to kind of coming into his own by the end and facing and conquering his fears. But I love how that's handled. Essentially, his fears, in a way, are justified. This world is freaking terrifying that we are given in this movie. I mean, lots of things die. A lot of things die. And they die in very violent ways. There are people out to kill you. Nature is out to kill you. Nature is, like, the main antagonist in this film. But I love how the balance of beauty and danger is, like, this so delicate. Even the dangerous things are really beautiful in this movie. And all of that has gotten across usually visually. And so I think we have the scene with the fireflies where Arlo realizes that nature can be beautiful. And then you have the scene where the father dies, where you see the danger in nature. And then when he's swept away, I think each character he meets is kind of like symbolic of the stage he's on in his journey. Because, like, the first character he meets is essentially him grown up. It's like what he will become if he doesn't learn to stand up for himself. It's this, the character, the pet collector, voiced by the director Peter Sohn, who also he voiced Squishy in Monsters University and Emil Rami's brother in Ratatouille. But and he's essentially this character who, like Arlo, is kind of defined by the fear and danger of the world. So he just kind of cowers in the woods with all his imaginary animal friends. This is Dream Crusher. He protects me from unrealistic goals. And this is Debbie.
I love just the shot being held on her. So that was such a funny scene. I think that was the first time the movie truly got, like, really funny at that point, and it felt very much like a Pixar movie. But yeah, I didn't even think about it when you were putting it that way, but the characters he meets are so sparse that I do feel like there's importance to the ones that he actually does meet. They're there for a reason, so that's exactly why multiple viewings are needed. Now I want to go back and watch it.
and then he meets the pterodactyls who are in this weird cultish thing, and essentially they're the ones who have seen the danger and power of nature and have been driven mad by it. I love Steve Zahn. He's amazing. He's so good in this role. You meet them, they're all friendly, and then they start just ripping apart this cute little raccoon. Yeah, this movie is so, so messed up.
But it's still so good.
Yeah.
I thought for sure it sounded just like Sam Rockwell initially, but then Steve Zahn has just something about his voice that makes him distinct from everyone else. And he plays crazy really, really well, and really, really funny. I have
seen the eye of the storm. A revelation. Yeah, and so, and then, you know, he meets the T-Rexes, which are people who have essentially, I wouldn't say conquered nature, but have kind of harnessed nature. And they understand, they have the balance of the dangers that are very real, but also how to channel it into something productive. And that's ultimately where kind of they give Arlo the job, and he finally has to kind of stand up and kind of stick up for himself and learn to fight. And that's kind of like where his journey, that's where he kind of, he comes to the realization about himself. And then immediately after that, his resolve is tested again by facing the nature, and then, well, that having to overcome his fear and stand up for his friend that he met, which is like, you know, doing the thing that's bigger than yourself, and ultimately facing down what took his father away, you know, the Ymir and Mor part. So I think just, but, and none of this is like spoken out loud. I think it's all just like woven in the kind of the DNA of the film. And I think just to have what is ostensibly a kid's film just deal in these kind of this have this epic odyssey where each kind of each character has his meaning and all that is very fascinating.
Yeah, it's so much more than I think most people ask for or expect from kids' movies. So the fact that it did it just proves it's one of the reasons why I love Pixar is they go above and beyond every time they release a movie. And this was no different, even though I think some people, or evidently just a lot of people think so, but no, their storytelling ability hasn't changed. It was just different for this one. Something else that I really, really liked about this movie that we mentioned earlier was this cast is just great all around. Steve Zahn is awesome. I didn't know it was Frances McDormand initially. I went and looked up the voice cast after I watched it, and it's ironic because I had just seen Fargo for the first time. Now I really like her. And Sam Elliott is awesome as the T-Rex.
He's the most perfect casting ever.
Yeah. He, as soon as that's a voice that there's no way at all to not miss or to not notice because it's so distinct. And he just this character of this old grizzled frontier man is just really, really fun to watch.
Who else are you going to get to voice a cowboy T-Rex? I mean, seriously.
There's only one person. Yeah. And then I'm not sure of his name, but whoever voices Arlo did a really good job. Because,
Raymond Ochoa?
Okay, yeah. He made Arlo, to me, one of the most endearing Pixar characters now. I was so fully invested in his journey. Just, he had that, like, that child... like innocence in his childlike, he is a child, but he had that like that innocent quality in his voice and that naivety, and but still not the annoying kind. It was just
he just it was like a kid.
Yeah, he was just a kid, and a kid that you are rooting for, and so he was essentially had the task of carrying this movie almost. Well, I mean, the visuals obviously told so much of the story, but as the character, he was front and center, and I think he did great as well. So this, just all around, it's a very small cast, but everybody's really great.
Mm-hmm. And also, I gotta mention Jack Bright as Spot. I mean, I adore Spot with like every fiber of my being. I don't think it hurts that he's essentially my youngest brother without the dog-like qualities. I mean, there are so many times where like I see my little brother, and it just in the way. Because he acts like a kid, like a, just in how open he is, and just everything he sees, he reacts to, and just obviously he's intelligent, but there's just this like wide-eyed wonder about him, how he sees the world, and it's such a lovely character, and the friendship between him and Arlo, is so beautiful.
Yeah, one of my favorite duos in a movie now. They're just... Spot is adorable. I love watching him. The confidence that he carries, always barking at these giant pterodactyls and thinking like he can take on everything. And
just headbutt a giant snake.
Why not take it on? He's just... He's so... He's really well-developed. And that's really weird to say, given that he has no lines.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a character.
Visual storytelling again.
Yeah. Start to finish, there's character change, there's character growth, there's an arc that he goes on without any dialogue. He starts the movie in complete opposition to our main character, and they end as best friends, and that relationship had one person who could speak. So the fact that I am so invested that at the end, whenever they're forced apart, and I made the mistake of halfway into this movie assuming that, hey, maybe this will be the first time I don't cry in a Pixar movie. And then the goodbye happens. And I was just, I cared so much about the relationship by the end of it that it did. It was such a bittersweet moment in the movie. And it was all because they told a complete whole story of these two characters.
Yeah. The two most emotionally powerful scenes of this film are completely dialogue free. You have the first, the scene where after they finally become friends and then they're on the beach and they tell each other the story of their families through stick figures and lines in the sand. And it's just, and they, I don't know how they made that scene without getting hokey, but just as like this, the little shorthand just completely naturally develops where like Arlo, as the more advanced character, sets it up, and at first it seems like Spot doesn't understand that he does it himself. And they kind of just knock over their parents, the ones that have died, and cover them. And then just, like, kind of howl, commemorate them by howling to the moon. It's, oh, man. It's amazing.
Yeah, whenever he put his sticks in the sand and then slowly pushed the other two down, and he kind of gives them this look, I got goosebumps and I just wanted to break down. Like, this, I don't even hardly know this character and I'm already like about to cry for him. And yeah. Then Arlo knocks his and they howl and it's, oh my gosh, it's one of the most perfect scenes ever.
This movie is like, is cinema in its purest form.
I don't see how someone can dislike it. I really don't.
Yeah. And then you have, I like how, even though he's kind of coming to his own towards the end when they finally meet Man, and you have that awesome, that beautiful theme, and Spot obviously wants to go, but kind of Arlo kind of selfishly keeps him along because in a way he's kind of like his security blanket. In a way, also he's company and a friend, but his reasons for keeping him are kind of selfish. And then finally, after he's overcome his final hurdle and he knows who he is, he's able to kind of let go of Spot and give him to a better future. And when he doesn't want to leave, he draws the line around the family.
Oh,
nice. Yeah, I recently just got out of Logan, I came home and started putting my notes together, and I was already kind of on very tenuous ground emotionally. I YouTube that scene, and I was literally just crying in my kitchen. Just, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, that scene, you know exactly what he's doing as he begins to draw the circle. And as soon as I saw him do that around the family, I just knew Pixar did it again. Made me cry again.
Darn you.
Every time.
Yeah.
Something else, like, I mean, we've talked about it just because it relates a lot to other things, but I just want to talk about it itself. I love the fact that this is a Western movie. It's a Western movie with dinosaurs. And no dialogue from the human character. Like, it's so unique in what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I would say it's probably one of the best Western movies to have come out recently. it's a combination of so many things that we've talked about beforehand. Just this atmospheric music that completely sets this, you know, unexplored frontier kind of mood. These beautiful vistas, these gorgeous animated, but it doesn't even feel animated, scenery, and you know, the story of survival in nature. Everything works together to create what is just a fantastic story set in the West. I didn't know it was going to be that going in, and as soon as it was made evident that that was the kind of movie this was, I just got a big smile on my face. I'm like, this is so unique and interesting. Like, I'm so glad that Pixar decided to make a movie like this, because this is great.
Yeah, I love just how freaking weird it lets itself be. Like, just from the random pet collector to just the drug sequence. They eat the rotten berries and just these two best friends learning about the world in all its wackiness. I mean, yeah, T-Rex cowboys? Yeah, why not? It's awesome.
That was something else that I wanted to talk about, was the way they ran. They ran like horses. It was so awesome. It was you could see, like, they were trotting, and then when they slowed down, it was they slowed down the way a horse would. It was that's such a small detail, but the fact that it was there is so awesome.
Their legs are horses, but they're holding their upper body as if they're riding a horse.
It was so awesome that as soon as I saw them take off, and I saw their leg, like, it shows their legs because of how much taller they are than Arlo, and I remember thinking, that's, like, wait, what are they doing? Why are they running like that? And it zooms, like, it widens up, and I see that they're riding horses. Like, this is the open plains, and that's what they're doing. It was a detail that could easily just go unnoticed, but I couldn't help but just appreciate that small attention. They knew what this movie was, and it was just little things like that scattered throughout this movie. So yeah. Good.
And where else are you going to find a pterodactyl cult that worships the storm and goes around eating cute animals?
The Jaws scene in the clouds, that was great.
Yeah. And again, that's the way this film balances beauty and danger, or just danger and fun. Like, for the first half of the film, water is danger. And yet, later on, he learns that water can be fun. The beautiful swimming scene where he falls in the water, he's terrified, but Spot just kind of teaches him to swim. Or hamsters. They can be, they're a lot of fun, but they can also be really scary, too. I love the scene where they all just come, it's just like silently, like, come like as a moving carpet toward him, and it like freaks them out. Just, or the clouds, where that sequence, another sequence is just like cinematic brilliance, where he's throwing Spot over the clouds to see the sun.
I got goosebumps in that scene. That was so good.
And then very shortly after, the clouds are used as the shark fins of these pterodactyls flying around. It's just, there is such a balance of how they do that that's like never verbally addressed. It's all just in the storytelling of the visuals.
Yeah, it's fantastic all the way through. Every scene has a purpose. We learn more about something with every scene, and there's lots of scenes with no dialogue. So I feel like the more I watch movies, the more I'm impressed by visual storytelling, because I think a lot of movies fail with their dialogue. Just unnecessary exposition. So when you can tell a story just by showing someone what's on screen, by showing their facial expressions, or by, you know, setting the mood with music or whatever you're doing, it's just, this movie told a complete story. It was more simple than a lot of other movies, but it had a start and it had a finish, and there was character arcs and a whole journey, and so much of it was just completely visuals.
Yeah, and I guess for my final positive, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I can't stress just how beautifully the element of danger exists in this film. Like, Spot, I mean, Arlo spends the majority of this film covered in very visible bruises. Every time he heals, he gets into some other accident, and he's like, and he gets beat the crap beat out of him. And like, the scene when he's trapped under the rock, and we just get the flash forward, and he's just like laying there curled in a ball, and you see all the ground around is like clawed up, and you realize he's gonna die. Death is everywhere in this movie. I mean, we see a raccoon get eaten. We see his dad drowns. Like the pterodactyl gets just like a huge hole ripped in his wing, and just like every time you think you're safe and he starts enjoying the world, nature comes back and just like says, "No, I'm in charge." And to see that in a kid's film that doesn't just play around with the danger that forces that creates it as a force to be reckoned with. I haven't even seen any Pixar films before that. And that just really impressed me.
Yeah. And that was it's another instance of just like little detail that can go unnoticed, but means so much being there is, Arlo looks so much more beaten up by the end of this movie. Like every time he gets out of something, there's another bruise or there's another scar. And so we see him grow as a character, and then we just look at him physically and we see that he has gone on a legitimate journey, and there's details. Every bruise and scar on his body has a story, and we've seen it. It's not just kind of arbitrarily put there.
Yeah, I love the circular nature of the plot, where it begins with the father walking through the farm, and then in the end we get the same mirrored shots of Arlo returning, with the exact same shots. Or, you know, it begins in the river, it ends in the river. He meets the pterodactyls and flees, and in the end he has to come back and defeat them. It's just this, it's an odyssey, essentially, where the character has to literally kind of defeat his foes throughout the film. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. Agree with everything.
All right. Did you have any dislikes that you want to mention?
Kind of. Maybe a little. I feel bad for listening. This is a dislike because I laughed at it. The mushroom scene felt like kind of out of place. A little. It was way more goofy, and the style of humor just felt a little different than everything that had come before. I don't know how well that fits in with the overall movie, but it's like 15 seconds anyways, so it's hardly like it's legitimate nitpicking, and I laughed at it still. It kind of stands in contrast with everything else.
Yeah, and I think it's probably maybe the one scene that actually doesn't serve a story purpose.
Yeah.
Being so bizarre and out of left field, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. So I think my biggest... I go back and forth. I went back and forth as to whether to even include this. And I think I want to watch the movie more before I really kind of come down one way or the other. But I feel like we didn't have to kill the dad. And I say this for two reasons. One, because I just hate the fact that he died, because I love him in the movie. And I'm tired of children's movies ripping my heart out from the very beginning. But I feel like it is kind of becoming cliche. Just let's kill either one or both of the parents to start off a movie. And I think that there's a way Arlo could have still gone on the exact same journey he went on as a character if his dad had lived. So to me, it's just, even though I was sad whenever he died, it didn't really hit me with the emotional impact it does every time. And that's because it's like, literally, as soon as I realized that the movie was making me like him, I was just kind of counting down the seconds until he was inevitably going to die.
Yeah. I think maybe if he had been crippled or something, like through Arlo having let the critter go, something like that, where he has that weight on his character, and then the thing that drives him, and you know, kind of that ticking clock of the coming harvest and the father not being absent.
Yeah,
I think that'd be a more creative way.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, the important reason that he was gone for the story is because you do have that drive, that goal, the reason for Arlo to get back. You know, he can't stay at any one place too long. He has to get back there. So yet crippling him or finding any other way other than killing him to get him out of the picture, I feel like could have done, you know, I would have enjoyed that more. And then I think by doing that, it would have made the ending just a little bit, not that there's anything wrong with the ending because I love the ending, but as nice as it was to see him reunited with his mother, the bond with he and his father was a little bit more fleshed out. So I just think the ending would have been that much more emotional if he came back to his father to prove that now that his father can't, he's now up to the job. Like, he is now able to do this. And it would have just been a great reunion because I like their relationship.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright's so good. Yeah, but that said, the death scene is very well handled.
Yes.
Abrupt. And I love that.
Yeah, it's nothing against it. It's only because I've seen this done about 25 times before, where I'm like, you're a parent, and this is a children's movie. You're gonna die.
Richard, I guess for me, the main dislike is I think some of the dialogue could have used some work, and for how just beautifully subtle the majority of this film is, when you have a really obvious line that's stated like three times, it just sticks out like a sore thumb. So, and I think that's, like, when you have that in the beginning, very similar to where I talked about with Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse, I think viewers kind of, if you tell them everything in the beginning, they turn their brain off and then don't notice the storytelling later on if it gets good, if it gets subtle. So I think that's one of the things that did hurt this movie.
It's so unfortunate because it's so good otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And I guess another thing that's not even, I can't really justify calling it a true criticism, but this movie literally didn't have to be dinosaurs. I think the original story idea that Bob Peterson came up with was going to do something more with the idea that dinosaurs, that the asteroid missed and dinosaurs evolved. And for the story we got, it's, you could have essentially had the same story with any type of animal or humans. That said, I like that it's dinosaurs, and I like the physicality it allows, and having T-Rex cowboys.
I was about to say, we don't get T-Rex cowboys otherwise, yeah. so that better not be a dislike.
It's not a true flaw, but it is just something, just when you think about it, the concept isn't necessary, but it does allow for some fun stuff, and like the brilliant opening sequence really doesn't go to much kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's still awesome.
Yeah, not, I can't call it a real flaw, but it is. It's something that I've heard a lot of people complain about. I sort of agree that it's not necessary, but who cares?
So yeah, I mean, I don't,
Cowboy T-Rexes.
Yeah, I don't think everything has to be necessary. It could have been any other animals, and I'm sure that, you know, maybe there was a meeting where it's like, well, now that we're not, you know, focusing on the media anymore, could we do other animals? I would have been the one to raise my hand and say no, because we're going to have cowboy T-Rexes. It's going to be dinosaurs. I don't care if it's not necessary. This is so unique. We're having a dinosaur western.
And it does, I think the early man stuff is also kind of interesting and well handled. So I think that's about all I want to say for this film. Is there anything else you want to mention before we move into our final thoughts?
No, I'll just have to try to think of final thoughts that capture how much I legitimately enjoyed this one viewing in.
Yeah. So I'll start. I think this film, as with a lot of others we've talked about here, is a case of where expectations kind of cause the viewer to view the film through the lens of what they expected or what they wish they had got, rather than what the filmmaker actually intended. And you can't honestly engage films that way. I mean, it's very difficult to escape expectations. We all have them. And that's kind of why I think everybody should watch a movie at least twice before they review it. But it just, I think this film is the most unique movie Pixar has ever made. And that's saying a lot. Because while they have had so many unique ideas, this one is such a drastic departure in style. Not only for Pixar, but for kids' films and animation as a whole. I can't think of another kind of quiet, somber, dangerous, symbolic man versus nature tale that's also kid friendly. So it's a movie that really, that deeply moves me every time I watch it. I think if you watch it not expecting a complex character drama, because it's not, it's much more subtle, it's much more visual, it's a film you experience, like in the moment of watching, you just kind of just flow along with its emotions. And I think if you saw this and hated it, or haven't seen it at all because of the critical reception, I say go rewatch it and just allow the film to take you on its story on its own terms.
Yeah, so I agree with all of that. I would, for people who haven't seen it and are kind of dissuaded to go see it just based off of critical reception, please see this movie. It's so well done. It is to the quality that Pixar movies are always. It's not to say that there was less amount of care that went into this. I couldn't disagree with more. It's incredibly quiet for a children's film. The idea that they actually had the boldness to make a movie that's this subtle, with these few amounts of dialogue, and has so many just like legitimately dramatic moments, and to say, yes, let's make this as a Pixar movie and market it to kids, like that, I applaud them for that. So it's absolutely worth a watch. And then, like Gabe said, if you have seen this and for whatever reason you just were not a fan of, I would recommend just watching it again. I'm gonna probably watch it again soon. just because visually it's one of the most impressive films I've ever seen. It's got fantastic music, great characters. There's a legitimate story from start to finish. It's got everything that not just animated films should be, but just movies should be. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic story. It's a fantastic piece of cinema, and it's worth watching.
Yeah, and is the idea that simple is somehow lesser, I couldn't disagree more. I think taking a simple idea and telling it well is just as, if not more, difficult, because you have to be original. You have to be creative and work hard for every emotion. If it's something that people have seen before, you need to earn it. Because if it's like some crazy concept, you can kind of just coast by on the style and just the freshness of it all. I think when you take a story that is this simple and this kind of ingrained in us, the man versus nature tale, and then just tell it so beautifully, I think that's just as deserving of praise as anything else in cinema. Well, all right, that was our review for The Good Dinosaur. I hope if you didn't like it, that we kind of inspired you to go back and look at it with a kind of a new perspective. And if you already liked it, I hope we made you love it more.
I hope if you didn't like it, we didn't make you mad.
I don't care.
But I will still defend this movie tooth and nail.
Yeah. All right. So next week is your pick. What are we going to be looking at next week?
All right. So next week, it's going to be something that is decidedly not a children's film. Is Out of the Furnace. This is a movie that I saw that was on Netflix, and I remember seeing a trailer for it and thinking that might be pretty good, and then seeing very mediocre to low reviews and thinking, well, that stinks. And I finally watched it on Netflix, and I really, really enjoy it. It's got fantastic performances from Casey Affleck, Christian Bale, Woody Harrelson. It's a really great movie. A much smaller movie and probably less known than some of the others we've done, but it's a movie that I really enjoy, so I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Interesting. I haven't seen this movie before. I was mildly interested to kind of get turned off by the critical reception, but I am definitely interested to see if it's good. That's a great cast.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, now thanks for listening. And again, if you enjoy this podcast, please go and rate and review us on iTunes. And if you want to follow us, you can like us on Facebook. That's where we do most of our interaction. And you can find all of our older episodes on underratedpodcast.com.
And we also have an email. If you want to email us, we are theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us at underrated_pod on Twitter. So until next week, we will see you later. Thanks for listening.
See ya.